And let's take a look at a few of the year's biggest science stories as we close out this year with Joe Palca, NPR science correspondent. Joe, welcome back.
Oh, it's great to be here.
And one of the most controversial issues in science happened just a month or so ago. Chinese scientists said he edited the genes of twin embryos, and this was greeted with shock and outrage in the scientific community. Tell us more and why it's so controversial.
Well, the reason is that there are two kinds of cells inside your body. One are the so-called somatic cells. And these are the cells that make up your skin and organs and what have you. And when you die, they die. That's it. They're gone. It's over. And a lot of diseases are thought to be curable by fixing these somatic cells. So if you have a sickle cell disease, mm-hmm. you might be able to treat the cells with some sort of gene-altering thing that would correct the sickle cell damage, and then you'd be fine. There are another kind of cell inside the body which are called germ cells, and I don't like that name. It probably is there for a reason, but it basically refers to eggs and sperm. And the difference there is those are the cells in men and women that are carrying the genetic instructions that get passed on to offspring. If you mess with the genes in a germ cell, in a sperm or egg cell, that is going to be passed on for generations. And that seems to be crossing an ethical line that people are very uncomfortable with, because it basically means we're tinkering with humanity, not just one individual, but with our species.
And that is what this scientist did. And he did so using CRISPR, which, if I remember correctly, is one of the stories that you told us about last year, was one of the most important things in science was CRISPR. And now here he is using this technique to alter the DNA of a human being.
Exactly. And CRISPR is still one of the most disruptive, momentous tools that has come to biology in years. Believe me, people have thought about how could we change the genes here? How could we fix this there? It was a very labor-intensive process, and CRISPR basically just makes it a whole lot easier. And so these questions, which seemed hypothetical at one point because, oh, it's way too hard, we could never do that, now suddenly, oh, yeah, you could do that. And now someone has done that, and it got everybody up in arms.
Okay, so that is one big science story of the year. Another one comes from outer space. This was a great moment. NASA's InSight probe landed on Mars in November. Here's the reaction in the control room at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Touchdown confirmed.
Okay, and then we spoke with Bruce Bannard, who was InSight's principal investigator, the next day after the landing. Here's what he told me.
The time it takes for a radio signal to get from the Earth to Mars or from Mars to the Earth is about 8 minutes right now. And so since it only takes 6.5 minutes to go from the top of the atmosphere to the surface, it's actually already landed by the time we start getting telemetry back that it's starting the process.
This was just a remarkable feat. Explain what it was that they're doing and why it was so amazing.
Well, yeah, and I was sitting at JPL about a couple hundred yards from the control room that you just heard cheering, and there were several buildings and a large courtyard in between, and you could almost imagine you could hear the cheering all the way across the campus. It was a thrilling day. It's just crazy difficult to land a spacecraft on another planet, and it makes people nervous. The guys who are going to have to land the next one, or the guys and gals, if you'll forgive me, that are going to have to land the next one are terrified because now they think the expectations are high. Everybody thinks this is easy. This mission doesn't rove and it doesn't scrape up dirt. It has a seismometer that will measure Mars quakes and a temperature probe that will measure the temperature of flow of heat through the planet. And the whole idea is that by studying these things, Mars quakes being the Martian equivalent of earthquakes,
right. They
will be able to understand more about the deep structure of Mars, because all the other missions have, as they like to say quite literally, just scratched the surface. And when you look at seismic waves, they propagate through the entire planet, and you can begin to learn things about the interior of Mars. So that's why they're excited about this mission.
And one thing that scientists did learn about the interior of Mars this year is they discovered an underground lake.
Yeah, well, that was a cool one, and that came from an orbiting spacecraft, a European Space Agency spacecraft, and yeah, it seems like there's this briny lake underground. Mars, in the first pictures that came back, looks pretty barren, I mean, pretty dead. And the idea that there's actually water sloshing around someplace is a kind of an exciting thought, because it's possible, very possible, maybe I could only say possible 12 times and it wouldn't be enough, that there could be life in this water. So
I thought you were going to say that we're going to ruin this planet and have to go there and we'll need water. there was also this year, Joe, the Parker Solar Probe to the sun, by the way, which we shouldn't forget about, which is going to go and maybe learn a little bit more about the sun. But a big loss I want to talk to you about in science this year, physicist and author Stephen Hawking died in March. How much did he influence science and culture during his life?
Well, that's a very interesting distinction that you just made. Culturally, he was a phenomenon. I mean, if you put genius and Hawking together in the same sentence, everybody would say, well, of course. Okay, so what did he do? Well, I'm not really sure. It's what most people would answer. He had very, very thoughtful and important things to say about the nature of gravity and the nature of black holes, and the specifics of what he's done are really, really dense to get through. But everybody who worked with him, knew him, was totally impressed with his intellectual prowess and the fact that he was, as you remember, in a wheelchair, unable to speak for most of his, almost all of his adult life, and accomplished so much was a thrilling thing. And he was a very puckish guy. He liked to do crazy things. So he was on The Simpsons, and he was,
right,
I think, on Star Trek. And, you know, he would do these things that intellectual geniuses were supposed to be above somehow, and he wasn't.
There was a very destructive volcanic eruption in the United States this year, Hawaii's Kilauea volcano. Here's a resident describing it on CNN.
All we heard was a boom. What is that? And then all of a sudden we smell the sulfur dioxide. We knew something was happening. Within minutes, we've seen smoke, and now we see all this lava coming across the street, and it's pumping right now. So this fissure is opening up.
The eruption began in May and lasted until early August. Why did this make your list of the most important science stories of the year?
Well, it was, you know, it was a natural disaster of a sizable proportion. I mean, there were over 700 dwellings destroyed, mm-hmm, and 30 miles of road was damaged by ash. And the other thing was just the volume. I mean, 875 acres of new land was pumped out by the lava that hit the water and solidified. So it's a big one. I'm a little bit loath to say that it was the big science story of the year, but it seemed colorful and impressive, and so we included it.
And we, of course, had natural disasters related to the weather, a lot of people making the connection with climate change and how much the climate is changing. What have we learned about that this year?
It's really a great example about how science progresses, the understanding of how the climate is changing and how that climate change is affecting weather patterns in various parts of the world. I can tell you that 30 years ago, I was writing about climate change, and there were scientists then who were sending out the message saying, we must do something about this. This is going to be terrible. And we're convinced that there's going to be a sea level rise and tremendous changes in the weather. And it's not that people said, oh, well, that's nonsense. They just said, well, we don't really have data. Now we have data. And the connections that people were predicting were going to happen have begun to happen. And you can see this play out. But it's not like, aha, I've discovered climate change. It takes place over a long period of time. And now people are pretty convinced.
Now people are pretty convinced. But as everybody's been saying all along, we got to do something now about this. Do you get the sense, looking forward to 2019 and beyond, that there is hope of reversing or at least slowing global warming?
Well, what do they say? Hope springs eternal. I mean, I'm thinking that the nations of the world got together in Poland at the end of the year and set up a framework for how to measure and understand what was happening and possibly reverse it, or at least keep track of it, and some suggestions about how to slow things down. So, yeah, I mean, who knows when we've waited too long. I hope we haven't waited too long already.
Joe Palca, NPR science correspondent, looking back at 2018 and the big science stories with us. Joe, Merry Christmas. Thank you.
Thank you. It was fun.